Welcome to my podcast, Success Without Apology. I'm Rachel Milo. Together, we will pursue success in a legendary way, and we will do so without apology. Thanks so much for joining me. Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm so excited to talk to you again on this Monday. I have a very special guest with me today, Emma Otto, who has worked with me, I guess, off and on for almost 10 years, maybe. I think we met probably about 10 years ago when she was working in Chicago. Emma is a senior account executive at a cloud computing software company. Emma, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So before we get started, I want to just tell one story about Miss Emma that sticks in my mind as one of just my favorite kind of first impression stories. And I had just met Emma. We had worked at a B2B event or luncheon in Minneapolis. And then I think we were back in Chicago. And I had somebody else with me working. But literally, this was like maybe my first or second meeting with Emma. And we go outside and we are going to catch a taxi, but it's raining. And so everybody's got their umbrellas. We are standing at the taxi stand and there's like this forever long line that we're waiting for this taxi. I mean, we're 10, 12, 15 people. This is pre-Uber, by the way. And standing there with our umbrella. And then this man basically goes up a block to circumvent the line and catch the taxi right before it would get to the taxi stand. And again, I barely know Emma, and Emma and her umbrella go running up there and yelling at this guy, like giving him what for cutting that line. And how dare you get in front of all of these women standing here with their umbrellas? And I mean, just letting him have it. At that moment, I was like, she's a boss lady. I'm going to follow her. It was one of my favorite first impressions of meeting someone who I just thought, yep, I like that girl. She is not going to have this. She is not going to have people just cutting in line for the sake of it. And we're going to sit here passively and watch that go by. Emma, do you remember that story?
Oh, I do. Hilariously enough, I think you could probably survey 10 or 15 other friends who have a person cutting Emma in a taxi line and it not ending well for that person's story.
Oh, I love that story. It's so funny. So when we were working together, you were in a sales executive for another media company, and I was working in the B2B space, and I was working remotely out of Oklahoma, but serving the Chicago office, New York, and San Francisco offices. And after a little while working in Chicago, you decided to make a move to the New York City office. I mean, it seems like kind of one of the things for smaller market sales executives to do is they want to climb the ladder. But what made you decide that you needed to go to the New York City office and be near corporate?
Yeah. So I think from a personal perspective, New York was always on the list. And I was very open with management about that, in that that was a professional and personal goal to work in that market. And I would very much like to do it with the company if they would have me. But I had to also be honest that if they weren't going to consider that, that I would have to consider looking elsewhere to make that move. So I think just being transparent from the beginning about your ultimate goals is what helped lead me to that transfer.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. Sometimes we go into jobs and we're just so happy to get the job. I think this is something that we see for women in general as well, which is, I'm just so glad to get the job and it's a good job, that I don't state up front really what my expectations are for the company as well. So I think that's a really good point about just, you know, knowing up front what you want out of that role and stating that. And I think that's probably served you pretty well in multiple settings, right?
Absolutely.
So then you get to New York and you're working in, you know, the high rise in New York City and working, you know, right outside the door from the senior executives and the presidents of a major, you know, one of the world's largest media companies, and, you know, kind of, you know, being a boss over your territory. And then you have a triggering event in life. And you want to tell us a little bit about what happened then?
Sure. So I moved to New York. My lifelong dream finally comes true. I'm absolutely ecstatic. And 3 weeks in, we find out my mom has breast cancer. And so I was transparent. I said I would like to keep the Minneapolis territory. I think I'm the best person to serve it, but I also selfishly really need to be splitting my time between the two places. Management was very open to that idea, and so I was very fortunate to work for a company that allowed me to go back and forth while she was going through treatment. And unfortunately, about 9 months in, it turned deadly very quickly in a matter of weeks, and I had to be really transparent about what was going on in my life with management to be able to get the flexibility I needed in one of the most critical times in my personal life.
And so when you say you have to be transparent with management, talk to me a little bit about what that meant. Like, how did those type of conversations go? I think oftentimes we are told as women we are too emotional or that our emotions keep us from advancing. But you are at a time where you are, you know, on your knees emotionally. And so how did that conversation go, and what gave you really kind of the strength to be emotional in that professional setting?
Yeah, I think I had a mentor early in my career who is a great woman. She's still prominently in my life. And one of the things she said early on when I cried at work for the first time, which everyone told you you're not supposed to do, is if you aren't crying about it, you don't care about it, and you're not being human about it. And I thought, for someone who myself is such a type A perfectionist, that was such eye-opening advice, to be vulnerable, to be human, to not try and be perfect all the time. And it led to more meaningful relationships in my work life. Many of people who I've stayed with in touch throughout my career, whether we ever cross paths professionally or not again. And the other aspect I had going for me at this job when I was going through my mother's passing was I had a higher up manager who was very empathetic. He believed in empathy, and he led and managed from that emotion. Mm-hmm. And so I just took guidance from that. And I just said, I need empathy here. I'm an only child. I'm living 1,500 miles away from home, and this is what's happening. And I need flexibility, and I need support. And I want to stay working here, and I love this company. But this is kind of what I need right now. I need time off. I need to go get my head together. I need to kind of learn my new normal. And that doesn't mean working for a few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. What a big conversation and a big ask. You know, we think so often of these corporations as really being such, you know, X's and O's and red tape and everything so official, that at that moment, really what I think you were able to see is that there are still empathetic people in leadership, and there are still ways to ask for what you really need as a human. And sometimes we, either in management, forget to offer that, or as an employee, we think we can't ask for that. And so you were able to have that conversation with him, and then your mom passed, and you were able to take a little bit of a sabbatical, correct?
Correct. It took in total about 6 weeks off. I tried to work for the first 2 days. My boss literally told me to get off email and take the time that was needed.
Good for him. Good for your boss, really. You know, losing a parent is so hard. And like you said, as an only child and your mom, and being so young, at this time you were in your 20s, late 20s or early 30s, I'm guessing.
Late 20s.
So, you know, just really young, such a huge life change at a really young age. And, you know, this triggering moment not only impacts those next 6 weeks and what you do to heal and grieve and express, but what did it do for you really overall as far as in Manhattan and your husband and you and what decisions you made? How did that really kind of change your course?
Yeah, I think, you know, we had been on the road at that point for a couple of years. We kind of always knew we wanted to go back to Minneapolis at some point, but I think we thought, oh, it's more like mid-30s when we want to buy a house and, you know, when more of the adult stuff was going to come. And then a really big adult thing happened in our life. And it really made us take pause and decide, okay, maybe the next step is going to come sooner than we expected. And maybe the best thing is to go home and be supported by our families and support our family in going through this. You know, I felt a great responsibility to help take care of my dad, even though he doesn't need taking care of, but just supporting him and being closer to him. And my husband, you know, has amazing parents who had one child on the West Coast and one child on the East Coast. And, you know, my heartstrings were just really pulling that we probably needed to go back to the Midwest.
Sure. Sure. You know, that's, I think you said it correctly. You were kind of waiting for the adult things in life to happen and then they happen. And you allowed that to change your course. And I'm certain, you've probably never looked back and regretted that. And so that's a good thing. So tell me, now you're back in Minneapolis and, you made a few, business changes for what you needed in life. And tell me, now that you're back home, tell me something that you're doing today that you're really proud of as far as just Emma's success. Tell me something that's going on in your life you feel really good about right now.
Yeah, I think something that's been really nice about coming home is becoming more involved in community. And becoming more involved in the industry organizations that really helped raise me and start my career. I'm on the board of directors for MIMA, which is Minnesota Interactive Marketing Association. And it's really been meaningful to me because I've been able to reconnect with the community that I left for a few years. And I've also been able to come back and see younger women coming up the ranks and for the first time be able to kind of turn around and look back down that path of the 20s and getting started and helping mentor a lot more women in the industry and help guide them in what to ask for and how to get creative about asking for different things that might be a little unusual or not the usual ask of an employee when it comes to where they work from or, you know, what they negotiate in their offer package, things like that. So I think that has been really rewarding to have gained all this experience and then realize, you know, it's time to turn back and help the next generation coming up.
Yeah, Emma, I would say one of those, when I would talk to your peers in New York, I would say that one of the things they would always say about you is that you did know how to creatively ask for what it was that you wanted. And I think that's a great skill for you to pay forward and a great skill for you to teach and mentor around. I'm really glad to see that that's the sweet spot for you now. It's always been a gift of yours and so many women covet that skill. So as you pay it Thank forward, you. What is some of the best advice you could give my listeners today? And the listeners here are women of all ages in every aspect of careers and looking to just gain some insight from your life experience, what's some great advice you would give them?
I would say first be open. I think if you had met me at the beginning of my career, I had the 5-year plan, the 10-year plan, the 15-year plan. And some of that has gone that way, but a lot of it has creatively evolved. And I think for the better. I also would say, I always tell my friends, yes, the paycheck matters, but figure out what that happy money number is. And if it's not the highest you could come up with or that they came up with, think of other creative things to ask for, whether it's commuting or gym memberships or just random things. Think about the whole package. Yeah. So I negotiate for a living, and so I'm always thinking of everything that's going into to the offers that we're putting forth. And so I look at, you know, career moves and job moves that way as well. And the offer package is important, but also I've always tried to find managers who I either think I can immensely learn from, or who I think are just great human beings. And when I haven't chosen one of those two routes, it's led me astray.
So true. So true. And that's great advice. I love negotiate for a living. Not only as like you negotiate for a living, but I think we should negotiate for a life, right? Negotiate for the living with those comp plans. I think you're exactly right. It's not just the number on, you know, a biweekly paycheck or a monthly paycheck. And so I think that's great advice. So today I'm going to ask you for a final closing hashtag. At the end of each of my interviews, I ask you to give my audience a hashtag to live by this week. And what would that hashtag be for you?
I think it would be creatively negotiate.
Creatively negotiate. Hashtag creatively negotiate. I love it. I think it's a great one. And, you know, there's a lot of research out there, and I've talked about this in podcasts, that, you know, many of the books written out there about negotiation are about how to negotiate once the negotiation begins, but yet women don't even start the negotiation. So we don't even get to the point where we have to be good at it because we never make the first ask or the first negotiated response. And so I want people to really be inspired by really what your story is, how to negotiate for the life you want, and hashtag creatively negotiate. Emma, thank you so much for spending this time with me this morning. Thank you so much for just being a boss lady and for making that impression on me by not letting somebody cut us off in the taxi line. You know, it's just the little things that then begin the beginning of great friendships. And I'm just so excited that my audience is getting to meet you. To continue today's ongoing conversation on Success Without Apology, you can find me at Success Without Apology on Facebook or on Twitter and LinkedIn at my name, Rachel Melo. If you enjoyed today's discussion and podcast, please head over to iTunes and leave me a review. By doing this, you'll help me spread the message to other women looking to find success their own way. Also, don't forget to buy or suggest to a friend my new book, The 10 Commandments of Success Without Apology. It's now available on Amazon or rachelmelo.com.